Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. Host Green Diva Meg and co-host Green Diva Mizar share resources and ideas as they explore fun and low-stress ways to live a deeper shade of green. And now, your host, Green Diva Meg.
Wow. I want a picture of the two of you.
I know.
Hello.
We're sharing a mic, Green Diva Gina and I.
Hi, everyone. Yes. Welcome to the Green Divas Radio Show. You're on with Green Diva Meg.
And Green Diva Mizar.
And Green Diva Gina. Hello.
Really? Seriously? I have to get a picture of
cheek
that.
We're cheek-to-cheek.
They are cheek-to-cheek today because we have a very special guest green dude today. I hope nobody ate garlic over there.
No, we have chocolate breath.
Chocolate breath.
Well, that's
which is
good.
Not bad.
That's good stuff. Yeah. Anyway, our special guest green dude today, all the way from Ontario or California or somewhere, but he came out of New York today. David Wolf, who is like this awesome longevity nutritionist. What is your correct, how do you want to identify yourself?
Yummy
David?
Chocolate monger.
Yeah. We're all like stoned on chocolate.
People ask me that all the time. Okay, nutritionist, speaker, author, yes. Chocolatier. How do you want us to address you? So I'll do something like that, and I'll give them those four monikers. But basically what I do is I give a voice to issues, ideas, concepts, foods, superfoods, herbs, water that need a voice.
Okay.
I give a voice to things.
She perked up when you said water because she's a water gal.
I'm the water gal.
Oh, right.
But where did you came from Brooklyn today, but where's home base?
Well, I'm in L.A. sometimes. I'm in Toronto sometimes. I'm in New York City sometimes. I'm in Glastonbury in the U.K. sometimes. Mm-hmm. I'm also in Hawaii at times. And so it's somewhere between those places.
Glastonbury. I love Glastonbury.
Glastonbury
is that why
amazing.
You mentioned the tour? Yeah.
Yeah.
When we were driving over here and I mentioned the Tourne. I pointed out the Tourne, which is our little bump. You know, people call it a mountain, but it's really kind of, yeah.
Yeah.
When you've been around the world, it's a bump.
Yeah.
It's a cute bump. And I'm actually chewing chocolate, so don't mind me.
Oh, okay. No worries.
I'm going to join you in doing that.
Oh, my goodness.
David gave us a little sample and the...
he's giving you another sample.
Yeah, of course. It's a very earthy, all organic, all...
Raw.
And it's called Sacred Chocolate. Hold on. Well, you read this, Gina, because I don't have my glasses.
It's okay. It's called Sacred Chocolate Raw Naturally. This is a Twilight Dark variety that's 69% cacao.
Cacao.
My mistake. I'm sorry.
That's cute.
That's how you say.
That was one of the best pronunciations I've ever heard. Actually, cacao? I've heard them all. Right? I've heard
cacao's
everything.
Cute. Well, cacao is how you say cocoa in Italian. Cacao.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Yes. Well, so that.
There you
that's
go.
Probably why I confused it. Maybe.
Who maybe.
Knows? Maybe.
Well, we are going to have some fun today. Woohoo!
Yeah.
So, I just want to mention that we have a wonderful. Sponsor buygreen.com, and you have something about buygreen.
I did. You know what? Since this is an all chocolate show today,
because sort of
Green
like
Diva
it, yeah.
Gina did a chocolate post, I have something on chocolate.
God
as
forbid
well.
David wanted to talk about anything else because right. We're off on a chocolate
right.
Binge now.
Right. But apparently we can talk about water too, but let's not go there quite yet. So I went on to buygreen.com and I put in chocolate because I'm thinking, what can I find on buygreen.com that's green and chocolate? Well, the only thing that's on there, which is actually kind of funny, is you can get a bathrobe in organic chocolate bamboo fabric, and you can get your towels and your Turkish towels in a lovely chocolate color.
See?
It's only chocolate. You can't buy chocolate
to
eat.
Then what we'll do is we'll hook up our friend David here with his awesome world's best chocolate with our buygreen.com guy.
Yeah, we love buygreen.com.
Doug, you got to get this chocolate, man.
It's really, it's a very sophisticated taste. I'm really,
really,
really enjoying it. Usually chocolate, like after one or two, it's like enough.
Yeah,
but
no,
this is really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
Not enough.
Go ahead, Jim.
She's just not enough.
It's just not enough.
No hesitation there.
Yeah. So we also have some exciting things going on. Other than our own app, which I want to mention every week, because I really think it's exciting that we can just like, on a phone and listen to.
You've got to put mine on here because I have yet to figure out how to do it.
I will do that for you. We are now also on Stitcher, which is another very cool app for listening to particularly talk and news radio. And
so we're right there with NPR.
Oh, yeah.
And all the big time
Freakonomics and all the great, yeah.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, all the great.
Big leagues.
It is the big leagues. And
because
they were
the big leagues.
They were very complimentary when they, when I pitched the show to them, they were like, oh, we love you guys. You have great chemistry. So that, and I also want to say that Swell Radio, which is also a new app, and Swell is similar. It's all news and talk, but they're like Pandora. They're like the Pandora of talk radio. So, you know, they find things that you like and make recommendations. And, you know, if you hit like, then it puts it in your...
Gee, that's just swell.
You're so
cute. I'm sorry. It was too easy.
So cute. It's so funny seeing you with a microphone in your hand.
I feel like I did in my my reporter days. But, you know, I figured if Gina and I are sharing a mic... I don't want to make noise with this, with the stand, so it's easy. See, I just made a lot of noise. So
I don't want to make noise with the stand.
Yeah, so Gene and I, since we're sharing, we'll go back and forth.
Cool.
But if David doesn't start talking soon, I mean, I'm going to take
his
mic.
We'll make him talk soon. He's,
I'm
he's
kidding.
Just letting
I'm
me do
kidding,
the,
dude.
The opening stuff.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that's kind of cool this week is I have my new car this week to drive.
Yeah.
Drum roll, please.
Man.
This is the first time I have ever driven an all EV. You know, I had the Chevy Volt at one point, but that does have a gasoline backup engine. This is the Chevy Spark EV, which is all 100%. And it, you know what's so cool about it is, of course, I've always got music rock, and that was like one of the first things I figured out when I got in the car, got my phone all hooked up. I'm like, okay, cool. There's Pandora. Hello. But the car is so quiet.
Yeah.
And it also has, like, the power. There's no hesitation. There's no draw. There's no drag. It just smoothly. I feel like I'm in the Jetsons. You know.
Oh, in the hovercraft,
just,
if
yeah,
you will.
It's got that kind of, you know. And it's a very cute little car.
I haven't seen it. I saw it parked in the back, but we're going to get in it and do another couple
now,
videos
David,
for sure.
David's friend, and I can't remember your name.
Marissa
was in the back seat. It's like this tiny little car, but the back seat looked kind of groovy. How was it back there? It was fine.
Oh.
She's a nice little person.
And she's tiny, too.
Yeah.
So, you know. It's not like her leg's going to be sticking out the window or anything.
Good. So,
yes.
Today's show is pretty much, if you haven't figured it out yet, it's pretty much chocolate, and a little more chocolate. But we're going to sprinkle in some talk about, you know, the healthy aspects of raw chocolate and fair trade and organic and what all those things mean and why we should care about that and some of the work that David is doing other than his books to help get the word out, right?
Absolutely.
So I hope he doesn't mind that we're going to be a little obsessed with chocolate.
Well, I think the whole message is good.
It is.
With chocolate glaze.
Chocolate sprinkles on top. So... anyway, where was I? I don't know. So I've had too much chocolate already. I'm
oh,
like...
No. So I've got a quickie chocolate report, which is just something that I came up on my own, and I'm sure David's going to just chastise me for this later on. And then
I doubt it. He doesn't seem like chastising
type. Well, I don't know. Let's just wait and see. And then Green Diva Gina, our foodie file, yours is all about chocolate, four reasons why you should eat chocolate.
Yeah, there's four health benefits of chocolate, and then I did a brief history, too, because I think the history of how this food came an integral part of our society is really interesting.
And you mentioned fair trade, which is important.
Oh,
and
yes,
that's obviously,
you have to when you talk about chocolate, I feel like.
Yeah,
you know?
I think it is a big thing.
Yeah.
Right, and then I did a little extra post.
Yeah, I liked your rant.
Well, it was a rant. I I'm famous for my rants. You know what, Megan, I cannot. Do you want to talk about this now or later?
Yeah, talk.
All right, well, you know what, my thing is plastic, and I hate plastic, and, you know, I do filtered water, so there is no plastic bottles. But it just irks the bejesus out of me when I see those six-pack rings that have been tossed out, not just because
they
they're plastic.
They just shouldn't exist. They just should not exist.
And I put that, why are soda
companies...
They're
still here.
They're
Isn't
still
that
amazing? Here. It's beyond amazing. It's beyond amazing.
Who is carrying around a six-pack right now? I mean, come on.
But you know what? With all this sort of green... centric, sustainable, mm-hmm. but more to the point, ecological impact that these plastic rings are making. Why are bottling companies or whatever? I know it's probably cheap. It's cheap for them to do it that way. But you know what? It's costing a lot as far as planet Earth.
I remember even, like, I'm telling you, 20 years ago, we were learning that, you know, the bottle nose or whatever porpoises and dolphins were getting stuck in these things, and so we were cutting them
exactly.
If I had them now, listen, I don't even drink soda. So
I don't
have
either.
Those
but the
beer.
One I did in my post, I pick up on a parking lot because if I see it, I pick it up. My kids see it. They pick it up. And they come home. They cut it up, which is what I do.
Yeah.
And then I recycle it because
yeah,
I can't.
You have to cut them so that, you know.
It doesn't trap birds. I think that's what I heard. It was like birds were eating it. Their
birds,
heads were getting caught in it.
Turtles.
Something like
that. Sea turtles.
See all the pictures. It's horrifying.
I know. I put a couple pictures in there, but there are a lot more that can be in there. Because you have these little sea turtles, David, that will, you know, as it is, they're on an endangered list. You know, they're right there. We're seeing a lot of little baby sea turtles born, and they follow the moon, they go into the ocean, and you're thinking, great, but you know what happens? They become the potato chip of the sea. They're like every other animal
snack.
So if they survive to be big, that's amazing.
Marine food chain snack?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, exactly.
But they're the kale chip of the sea.
That's what it is. You're exactly right. The kale chip, sorry. And they're so cute, it's so sad, but they'll swim through it, and because their shell is bigger than their head, you'll see, instead of seeing a nice oval shell,
you'll have a
figure eight.
If you go to the post that, and it's a good post. It's a good
rant.
Thank
you. I tried to temper my enthusiasm.
Which is on thegreendivas.com. Shameless plug time. Thegreendivas.com. But anyway, you'll see a picture of a turtle that's, or tortoise that...
No, tortoise is a land animal.
Okay,
turtle is a water animal.
It's grown around the ring.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. Anyway, so my message is not so much to cut them up, but I think we should all rally to get rid of these things.
Yeah, let's just start barraging these distributors that package them these
ways. I think we need to rally to go for the excess wheat and corn just in this country and turn it into wheat and corn plastic.
Yeah, because at least it's biodegradable, right?
And get to the biodegradable and just get there.
Yeah.
Just before it goes any further.
Well, I do know that companies, like the... I'm not sure who it is that makes Heinz ketchup anymore, to be honest with you, because it's
Heinz.
It's all outsourced, is what I heard. Every single piece of it's outsourced.
You mean the containers.
But the containers are now like 80% bio-based plastics.
Incredible.
Which is, it's a step in the right direction. And we do. We need to just make noise and get there because it's ridiculous.
I think we're going to get there, actually. There's a lot of, like for example, it's illegal in San Francisco to use plastic bags now.
Thank God.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
They're working
Toronto,
on that in New York.
Same thing. Although, no. Toronto, they were charging, and now they've backed off on that. But lots of cities are doing this.
Parts of England, too, because when I was there, they would charge you for bags if you didn't bring your own.
Yeah. But illegal is like a nice,
extreme San Francisco thing to do,
right?
Isn't that great?
I love it.
Yeah. Well, and then we also put a link into a very short documentary called Midway, Message from the Gyre.
Oh, yeah, the little
plastic. Oh, have
plastic
your tissues
floating.
Ready, people. Have your tissues ready, because these albatross, and that's just the tip of the iceberg, or of the garbage patches,
yeah,
I say.
As it were.
Because they become this plastic, they these birds are found dead, and they look at inside, and it's all pink,
lighters,
blue, and unbelievable
pieces
stuff.
Pieces of toothbrushes.
Horrible.
It's just unbelievable.
It's horrible. So I think the pendulum is over. I think it's slowly swinging back, but it's going to be a long road to hoe. That's for sure. But, as long as we rally.
At least you didn't say road to hoe. Doesn't that make you nuts when people say it's a long road to hoe? And you're like, really? You're hoeing the road?
Yes. Well, no. No. I'm the grammar police sometimes. I got to know. A long road to hoe.
I'm all excited over here. Oh, my God. Really? Seriously. Thank God we're not filming.
So, that's okay. Might have been a nice visual effect, Megan.
Yeah. It's raining over here. So, anyway, we have a lot of exciting things going on. I want to take a quickie break. Really, literally, like a minute.
Uh-huh.
And I want everybody to stay tuned, because when we come back, we got a couple of segments, and then we're going to talk for like a solid half hour with David about chocolate and all
sacred
the other fun
chocolate.
Things he's doing, and I don't mean to.
And getting naked with chocolate.
Yeah, well, isn't that the name of one of your
naked
books?
Naked chocolate.
Naked chocolate.
Book. Yeah.
As it should be, and as it should be eaten, right?
Yeah.
All right. Hang on. I want Green Diva nails without all the nasty toxic chemicals.
I've got the solution. I just tried this G2 Organics non-toxic odor-free nail polish and remover. Did I mention odor-free? Look at my gorgeous toes. And you should see the colors. The colors are great. And the best part? Each one comes with its cool little touch-up tube.
And I guess since it doesn't smell, you can whip it out anywhere. The touch-up tube, I mean. Find out more at G2Organics.com.
What's with the slingshot? I haven't seen a slingshot since I was about 10.
Oh, I've been launching seed bombs in the ugly gray spots in my neighborhood. Can't wait to see what sprouts.
Come again?
A creative company called Greenade makes these clay balls that are regionally, you know, specific seeds, and offers them by internet and even vending machines around the country.
That is so cool. Can I borrow this? I want to shoot some bombs in my neighborhood.
Find out more about seed bombs at greenade.co.
Hi, I'm Marielle Hemingway, and you're listening to Green Divas Radio, and you're loving your life.
The Green Divas love food. Organic, local, fresh, whole, delicious food. Here now is another Green Diva foodie file.
Cut you off early. Sorry, G. I'm like too busy playing with my chocolate.
It's okay.
Yay. Okay, so.
Good reason. Don't worry.
Talk to us about chocolate.
Well, I knew that David was coming in today, and I thought it'd be really cool to talk about the history and some health benefits of chocolate, because there are some, you know.
You did a nice post.
Thank you. So I kind of want to talk about the fact that chocolate originated in Mesoamerica, so naturally.
What is Mesoamerica, just in case there's someone that doesn't know what
Mesoamerica,
that is?
It's like Central America, so think about where the Aztecs and the Mayans were. And they say that cocoa drinks could date as far back as 1900 BC. Some evidence suggests that as well.
That's right. She's right.
Yeah.
Good.
Yes.
It means our research
on
is
top
good.
Of it.
Yes.
And you'll chime in if
yeah, if I'm
not.
Wrong, if I'm wrong, you have to let me know so okay. I can change it in the post. I won't be offended at all. So it was regarded as a beverage during like special ceremonies, and priests used it as an offering to the gods. So it was a very sacred food, and it was an integral part of daily life, but it was a very sacred, special food. And then the conquistadors, when they took control over those empires, cocoa beans were actually used as tax payments as well.
It was actually their money.
It was their money.
It was their money. So, for example, yes, when Nezcoyotl, who was the contemporary, he ruled in a city next to Tenochtitlan. So
I won't ask you to spell
I
that.
I went
but
there.
So Tenochtitlan is Mexico City today, but there was basically Mexico City, the Valley of Mexico. There's about 50 cities that have all conglomerated into one. And originally it was Tenochtitlan was on one side of the valley, and on the other side was another city. It was run by Nezcoyotl, and he had it in his coffers at that time, just in that city, back in, this is about 500 years ago, he had about 900 million cacao beans.
Wow.
Somebody counted them?
So a cacao bean was worth about a tomato. It was worth about, for example, a ripe avocado was 3 cacao beans. That's what you'd pay for it.
Oh, okay.
So like a middle class, you were getting made, you were maybe making 200 or 300 cacao beans a day.
So it was currency.
It was their money.
But it was current. But did they do anything with that currency? I mean, did they then process it?
And yes.
They did. So the more they had, the more they could process and then resell in a different form? Is that what they're talking about?
What they would do is, first of all, the reason why it's money is because it has intrinsic value, and it has a skin around it. So the cacao bean or nut, it's actually a nut botanically, like a cashew or a walnut. It has a skin around it. So you could actually use it as money, and then when you wanted to actually eat it, you'd peel that skin off. You wouldn't have people's like dirt on it. You wouldn't have all this stuff, you know, fingerprints, whatever. So you'd peel it off, and then you'd have the cacao beans. And so on the streets of Mexico City back in the old days, Tenochtitlan, you would go and you'd say, okay, I want to get a corn hot water cacao drink. And that was the most basic drink. Now you can get other stuff added to it. You could get cayenne pepper added to it. You could get honey added to it. You get spirulina added to it. You could get this type of grass that they had called ock. You could get passion flower root was made into a really amazing tea. I mean, there's all kinds of amazing original additives. Macuna was one of them, which is the velvet bean.
Can we do this now? I mean, it sounds like the ancient Mexicans had gourmet kitchens over there. Can these drinks be made now?
Yes, they can be made now. What they used is what's called a metate, which is a hot it was basically it's an angled slab of volcanic rock, and they'd have a fire under it, so it would heat up this volcanic rock, and they'd take a kind of a roller, like a stone roller, like a rolling pin, but it was also made out of that volcanic rock, that basalt rock, and they would crush the cacao. They would mix it with cayenne pepper. They would mix it with whatever other herbs they were using, corn, for example, and then they would take all of that and put it into a hot drink, and they had these – the original, actually, they invented, the Mexicans invented the blender, which is the Molinillo. It's a hand blender. It was made out of a particular type of yucca plant.
Seriously?
Yeah. And it's a long piece of the yucca plant, and when the root ball would grow to a certain age, 2 or 3 years, it would stick out all these filaments all over the place, and so they would take that and they'd drop it in the drink and then spin it like that. So just like I would do with this microphone. So I'd take the microphone and drop it in.
Yeah. We have audio effects.
You know, that
too,
sounded
clearly.
Good with the ring too.
Yeah. Oh no, I get it.
That's interesting.
Right. It's like a whisk. Yes. Yeah. And actually in Veracruz today in Mexico, there are women who can do this and they can whip that drink up just like a blender. And there was all kinds of amazing drinks. They also did ones with just bee pollen. So they would take bee pollen or flower pollen and mix that with cacao and hot water. It was amazing drinks. Most of the time, interestingly, the drinks were unsweetened. So the original cacao drinks were always very frothy and very bitter, and that's how they liked them. But that's really the best way
like
to do it.
Coffee, you know. I mean, it's got very similar.
Very
right?
similar.
Good. Yeah. The history there.
Yeah. Okay.
And then with the conquistadors, it's brought over to Europe, where that changed chocolate dramatically, I'm sure.
It was suspected in 1528 that Cortez, on a trip back to Spain, brought cacao back to Europe for the first time. Mm-hmm. It's not actually known. Nobody knows for sure. Mm-hmm. But that's the best guess that we have historically.
Yeah. And then, I mean, I kind of go into detail about that so people can read the post, but it was saying that in the 19th century, John Cadbury, so if you all know Cadbury chocolate, he developed the first process to make solid chocolate and modernize the traditional chocolate bar. So he was the one who's behind, like, making it solid. And that wasn't really done until the Industrial Revolution. So by that time, you know, big companies could really commercialize it. They could advertise the treats, and then production could be, you know, spread throughout not just that country but that part of the world, really, because there's new machines that were producing it.
Well, talk to us about the fair trade bit quickly, because we're going to have to close up this segment in a minute, but and then we'll just carry on with it later, too. But mention organic and fair trade for us.
Yeah, what I was just saying earlier is that, you know, by supporting fair pricing, healthy working conditions, and sustainable farming practices, it really makes all the difference when you purchase fair trade chocolate, because, you know, child slavery happens at many farms across the world, and by purchasing your chocolate with that in mind, you get a fair trade stamp of approval, so you know that farm workers are given the justice that they deserve. It helps keep the workers out of poverty and maintain a stable income while promoting community development. So just by keeping in mind what kind of chocolate you're buying, I think is a really big deal.
Well, I'm helping now by eating.
I'm laughing at that. I'm hearing
wrappers being torn apart, chocolate flying across the room.
I was being very ginger with mine. Megan's like this.
I know. I'm frantically trying to. I'm like, I got to get this out. Here, let me have a little bite.
You're very funny.
I try.
Jean and I have been having the milk, M-Y-L-K. Is that how it's spelled? M-Y.
Oh, so I have to try a bite of that. Here.
Dairy-free, soy-free, gluten-free.
Here, try a bite
like
of this. This is
brilliant.
Magic.
Here, yeah, so is this
Mizar,
one.
Try this one right here.
I will.
This is the best ever.
That was a good foodie file, but I request that everybody go to our website and look at Gina's well-researched and thought-out and delicious post at thegreendivas.com.
Oh, my gosh.
Stay tuned. We're coming back with Mizar's DIY.
Rob, honey,
just a minute.
You want this.
Hope you're hungry. For more easy and delicious recipes and even more foodie information, go to thegreendivas.com. That's greendivas.com. Reduce, recycle, reuse, and if you're feeling creative, repurpose. Repurposing is one of Green Diva Mizar's favorite DIY things to do, and it's fun.
Sorry.
Well, you're all over the place with that.
I know, I really am.
Our chocolate's gone to our head. This white
it is totally
milk chocolate, what's it called? White chocolate, what do you call it, David?
White passion.
Oh, my God.
Isn't that good?
I'm not a fan of
it's
white
out
chocolate.
Out of this world.
Yeah, me either.
Usually
I was skeptical.
I'm a dark chocolate person. Mm-hmm. Like, that's always what I've been, but this is phenomenal.
I'm enjoying that milk
isn't
chocolate,
that
M-Y-L-K.
Oh, my gosh. Are you allowed to tell us what it is that just makes it like what I am certain is going to be completely addictive?
The key ingredient in the white passion is cashew.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Yeah, and so you can probably detect that. I mean, obviously there's cacao in it. We've got really an amazing angle with the lemon. There's a little bit
that's
of that
it.
Lemon essence
it's
in there.
It's like a lemon rind
yeah.
when you
yes.
zest
yes,
lemon.
Yes, lemon zest, that's
almost,
right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God, I'm in love.
It accents it though. You know what I mean? Like sometimes you have lemon in things and you're like,
it's too much.
Too much. But this, it just really accents it nicely and helps bring out the white.
Okay, so your
oh my
DIY.
Gosh. I don't even want to talk about it.
No.
Well, okay. Here's the thing. I am frugal. You know, part of repurposing and redoing and whatever. So during the holidays, we always have a lot of chocolate coming into the house. When I was anchoring news, I'd get like baskets of chocolate and stuff, and some would get eaten, whatever. And I just the thought of throwing it away would just drive me nuts. But you can only eat. Well, it depends. On a good month, I could eat a lot. But anyway. So what I did is when I last, after the holidays last year, I put a double boiler on the stove and I just melted all these different chocolates together. And then I just put in a ton of cocoa powder, the bitter, unsweetened cocoa powder, right. the really good stuff.
Yep.
And I just put a ton in there. And then what I did is I just took parchment paper. I let the stuff, I put the cocoa powder in after I had sort of turned the chocolate out onto the parchment paper, and I just kept kneading it in.
Oh,
like
interesting.
Like a dough.
Yeah.
Then I just let it harden, and I put cocoa powder down and on parchment paper again and put this big slab of chocolate on it and then more cocoa powder, because if you start with a bitter chocolate, you can do a lot more. And some of the chocolates were like milk chocolate, whatever. I mean, it didn't have any of the ingredients in there. It was just pieces of chocolate.
Yeah.
I made a ganache for profiteroles this weekend using it, and I thought, okay,
this is the
test. I'm telling you, it was outrageous. It was so good because it was just so heavy with the cocoa powder. Now, I'm thinking, is David going to approve of this or not?
Well, I guess it depends on what kind of, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I approve of all things chocolate. And my experience with chocolate goes all the way into actually growing chocolate trees. So I have a cacao farm.
Where?
In Hawaii.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, it had to be somewhere
very, very, it's the northernmost cacao farm in the world, actually.
What island?
It's on the north shore of Kauai.
Because I stayed in Makaha. Is that close to where you are? It's the north shore. Or you're in Hawaii. I was in
Maui?
I was in Kauai.
You were in Kauai?
Yeah.
Oh, you stayed in Makawao.
That's what's called
Makawao.
I obviously do not pronounce.
how did you say it?
It was called Makaha.
Well, Makawao.
It's Makawao. Yeah.
We love Gina. But it's like Kona Coffee. It's the only place in Hawaii where
the
coffee
mana
is grown.
In the water there, the whole energetics of Hawaii. First of all, being a raw foodist for 20 years, when I first got to Hawaii, I couldn't believe the food quality. I couldn't believe what was going on with the avocados. I couldn't even get a grip on how awesome the hot peppers were, the wild Hawaiian bird peppers.
Mm.
It just blew my mind. The kale there was just like, what is going on? I mean, it was a complete – it took me a few years to actually like to integrate it.
Wow.
To realize how good the food is. And there's a certain flavor component in the great fruits that are grown in Hawaii. For example, if you go to Malaysia and get durian, which is one of the great fruits in the world, it has a certain flavor. When you grow that same fruit in Hawaii, there's an essence in there that you pick up and you go, oh, that's Hawaiian grown. It's something like that. Same
cool.
with cacao.
Cool.
It has that essence.
All right.
It's different.
So David did not chastise me for repurposing mine. Well, because, you know, it's a lot of it's processed chocolate. I can't,
yeah.
I mean, obviously.
I think that's a really good idea. Instead of throwing it away, repurpose it. That's brilliant.
And then
hit the dark.
Oh, so much dark. I put so much cocoa
powder.
That's
where the medicine is.
Yeah.
And there you can buy and make sure that you're using the organic fair trade, dark,
bingo.
You know,
exactly.
Healthy, all
exactly
the
what I did. So I now have a chocolate, and, you know, you just put it in a dark place like you would your any brand of cooking chocolate, and it just stays there. And I have it for like the next
and then you can shave off
20
a bit.
Years. No, not 20 years. Yeah, you can shave off a bit. Anyway, the instructions are there. I had to make them up because I sort of invented this thing.
Well, that's how it goes.
And just before we close on this, you know, David's saying Hawaii. What do I always say when I hear destinations?
Oh, road trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a, that, yeah, we've got a lot of reasons to go to Hawaii now.
Yeah, well, just one, chocolate.
I'm originally from New Jersey, so you can make the jump to Hawaii. I did it.
Oh.
I, like it. I went all the way from Toms River, Seaside Heights, all the way to Hawaii.
Have you been down there lately?
It's been about 3 years.
Yeah, well, don't go down because it's well, no, because Sandy destroyed
right,
a lot of it.
Yeah.
We are so off topic. Megan, do the close and let's get to talking about real good stuff.
Okay, hang on, people.
For step-by-step instructions on this DIY project and to find out more about the Green Divas radio show and podcasts, visit thegreendivas.com. That's T-H-E, greendivas.com.
Okay, I kind of...
My mic was on.
Yeah, no, your mic wasn't on yet. I feel like I need to be an octopus back here. You know,
oh, yeah,
I'm like, I got that one going. I got this. I got to be on the mic.
That's and you can't eat chocolate while doing that. So for more for
no,
us.
Yes. Actually, we've now proven that.
Yes. Well, it was very funny, actually. I forgot what I was going to say.
Okay.
I was looking at the chocolate. That's why.
So for anybody that might just be joining us or jumping in the middle, we are here with a special guest today, a special guest green dude, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Hope he doesn't mind being called our guest green dude today. David Wolf, who's an author,
nutritionist.
He's a chocolatier, and he calls himself a raw foodist, which I haven't heard that term. I mean, I hear people talk about being a raw foodie, but raw foodist, I like
it's
that.
It's more the old school. Like when we got started 20 years ago, that was more like what we'd call ourselves, raw foodists. And then now it's like, well, I'm a raw foodie, and it's more, it's kind of, you know, it's more cool now.
See,
with
when
raw
I lived,
foodie.
When I lived in the Berkshires in the 80s, I was hanging out with Steve Meyerowitz, Sprout Man. I don't know if you know. Do you
know
Steve?
I know him very well. He's a good friend.
Oh, yeah, he's a good friend of mine. His ex-wife, Beth. Anyway, but in the 80s, they really taught me. I mean, we were all experimenting, but they taught me how to make all the, you know, Rejuvelac and how to make, you know, cashew yogurts and nut cheeses, and we would do all kinds of sprouting.
Yeah. You know, I have to ask, David, you said you're from Jersey and you've been doing this for 20 years. So what was your aha moment? What said to you, or what did you, why? why?
When I was 10 years old, we moved to California, and we'd started going to California in 1977. We moved there in 1980. So you can do the math, find out how old I am or young I am. And then we
young.
Got to
in this crowd, you're young, except for Gina, but go ahead.
So we got to California, and when I was about 18 years old, I went to college, and then I realized I had food allergies to dairy products. I had food allergies to gluten. So I got off all those things. I've been gluten free for getting close to 25 years and dairy free for 25 years. And, you know, before it was cool.
Yeah.
And then that eventually led me down this track towards raw food. But then one night in August of 1994, I had a vision about what I was supposed to do with my life. And from that moment, I have done it. That's what I've been doing.
And it's the chocolate.
I love
and
that.
Promoting raw food.
It's really giving a voice to my favorite plants, my favorite foods, different types of diet strategies, raw foods, superfoods, and also living water. That's another component as well.
All right, you got to tell me about that. I have to ask about living water because I get adamant about the quality of our drinking water. I get really crazy.
This is like a deep subject for me because I'm a Victor Schauberger student. You know, I've basically hunted wild springs in North America, Central America, South America, Australia, Asia, South Africa, and Europe. So I'm and Iceland and, you know, many islands around the world. So I have actually probably hunted out probably 400 or 500 wild cold springs where water's coming out of the ground. And that's where I begin my conversation about water.
Okay. And let me just ask you this. One of the biggest in this part of the country is Poland Spring. And it does come from a spring. But I've tested it. It's not what spring water to me should be. Are these springs as pure as they should be?
No, because we've put so much contaminant into the environment. And it gets into the groundwater and... There's different types of springs is something that I found out over the years, too, cold springs.
Yeah.
There's seepage springs, which are basically it bleeds out of the side of an aquifer, you know, so you're going to have more seepage when there's more moisture and rain. there are primary water springs, and those primary water springs are deep fissures in the earth. Those are things you're going to find more, for example, in California. You're going to find that more in the Alps, you know, where there's a crack in the earth and there's this fissure that comes from the deep earth. Those are actually better quality. So a seepage spring would be the worst quality. A deep primary spring would be very good quality. But the best quality is when a spring is actually created by the forest itself. So a forest, when you imagine a desert, the water retreats into the earth sometimes 200 or 300 feet. Usually at least 100 feet. And then you put a forest in on top of that, that water table comes up to where the roots are. And every now and then in an anomalous spot on the top of a hill, you're going to have water that actually emerges out of the earth. That's called a forest spring. That will be the purest type of water.
Cool, cool. Very cool. Well, I don't want to take you away from chocolate. What kind of water do you use to make your chocolate?
We only use spring water. In fact, our employees and everybody who works in that chocolate factory only drink spring water. That's what we supply them. And it's from a local – this chocolate factory is in Marin County, California, and there's a spring on the top of Mount Tam that I found years ago. I've been drinking from there for, I think, 9 years, and that's the water that is used in the factory.
See, I think that all makes a difference in certain products. And when you were talking about the delicious aspect of the food in Hawaii, I was thinking – you know, it's a combination of the water that they have there, the soil, the salt in the air, all the different elements that you know make up a
flavor.
Plant and flavor. Yeah,
yeah. Well, but I think that pretty much goes around the world. I mean, something you eat in Italy is not going to be the same here, you know. And in Hawaii, I find that fascinating. What you say that it just you can tell if it's grown in Hawaii. I think your palate has developed a real sensitivity, though. Would I be able to tell if it was grown in Indonesia or in Hawaii?
Well, if I took a chocolate bar, and we're in the process of doing our first chocolate bar from our farm, if I took a chocolate bar that was made from Hawaii cacao beans versus, for example, the Ecuadorian cacao beans that you just had in that milk chocolate bar, you'd be able to tell. You'd go, okay, now I understand the difference. And it's from those experiences over a long period of time that I know the difference. Right. So it's just experience.
Wow.
All right, let's talk about raw chocolate.
What's the equivalent term, a chocolatier, like a sommelier with wine, who really is an expert at tasting the various flavors and nuances? Is that what a chocolatier, or is there a different term?
I don't know if there is a
maybe
different term.
Maybe we should make one up.
Yeah, we should make one up. That's a really good idea.
A chocolate. All right.
So we'll think of something.
Yeah,
I mean, I'm thinking of some of the words like yolotl etztli, which is an Aztec word. it means heart blood, but it's kind of an alternative word for chocolate.
Okay.
So it's maybe yolotl or something. We can come up with a clever word.
There you go.
Knows?
Oh, and if it's Swiss chocolate, it could be yolotle hee hoo.
See, there. I told you she was going to come up with something.
I don't know. Well, I could come up with something. No, but let's talk. When you say raw chocolate, is it because of the way it's, I don't want to say processed because that already is a negative connotation, but is it how it's made that it's called raw?
Yes, exactly. Heated? So it's not roasted. It's non-roasted chocolate. It's non-roasted cacao beans. The beans could be sun-dried. Sometimes they're oven-dried at low temperatures, mm-hmm. but there is no roasting going on. So you're not crisping the bean. You're not crisping the...
Right, you don't go over a certain temperature if you are going to do...
Right,
like
exactly.
It's like 160 degrees or something?
Like, for example, in our chocolate factory, we don't go above 113 degrees Fahrenheit.
Oh, okay. Wow.
With any process goes on there.
It takes a while.
So you're not cooking the snot out of the chocolate bean is really what it comes down to.
Well, I guess, you know, with most foods, I mean, maybe you could talk about what the benefit of raw food is, really.
For the average person
who might not really know what raw food is all about.
Okay, so raw food has more essence in it. For example, in New York City, you can find 300 places that serve you green juice. It's basically celery, cucumber, lemon. There's no stimulants in it. There's no calories in it. There's no sugar in it. But you drink that, you have energy. That's what raw food is about. It's an energy we don't even have a name for. But that's why I give it a voice, because it needs to be known. There needs to be a name for it, because everybody's looking for something that has no stimulants, no sugar, no calories.
But gives you energy.
Yeah. And so there's more energy, like life force energy in raw
food.
That's
the term that I usually use, is life force. And people look at you like, okay, and you know, get a little eye roll going.
Yeah.
But I feel like I have to eat raw food every day. I'm not a raw foodist. But I like to have a certain percentage of my diet.
Yeah.
And I feel weird when I don't eat like enough. I'm like, okay, so I got to scrape some carrots on that maybe, you know, throw a couple nuts on there.
Yeah.
What is that? What is like the main staple of your diet? Or is it just anything raw?
It changes.
I mean, where do you get your protein?
Okay, well, I eat a lot of superfoods. For example, spirulina, chlorella, those are the highest protein foods in the world. I'll eat a lot of hemp seed, hemp protein. I love hemp protein. I'll do goji berry, which is 13% protein and a complete protein. I'll do maca, which is 17 of 18 amino acids, yeah, and it's 10% protein, which is pretty high for any vegetable, that's, yeah, for sure. And so basically, if we tore it apart, you know, with bee pollen and royal jelly and the other things I eat, it's really superfoods that I get my, yeah, protein from.
Yeah. But my next question is, am I going to go to Whole Foods and find all of these things?
Oh, yeah. You can go to Denville and find most of it.
But you can.
It's becoming more available.
Exactly.
It's really why I do the work that I do, is to make these choices available. For, yes, example, there was a time in America, you can get an avocado anywhere. No grocery store in 1940 on the East Coast of America, could you get an avocado?
I can do one better than that. When my mother came from Italy and I was eating Italian cuisine, that Mediterranean diet, all of my life. When she first came here, and she came in 57 and then moved from Brooklyn 4 or 5 years later, she would tell me, I can't get fresh beans. She said, I would have to get them in a can. It was like unheard of.
That, yeah.
Which is just, to me, the craziest thing ever that you can't get. And now my mother said, thank goodness that we have, A, more of an awareness, and B, that culturally people have brought, yeah, other vegetables in.
I want to strip this down because this is a very important point, and especially for green-oriented people who are listening.
Yeah.
And this is something I had to strip down inside myself when I was very young.
Yeah.
And that is, the reason why you have beans now, the reason why we have avocados now, is because someone decided that they are going to take a risk and sell it. It's because of sales, and it's because of sales skills. And this is very important, because in our world of like green, organic, eco, people are scared of the word selling.
Yeah.
And what I'm here to say is, unless we outsell Coca-Cola and Pepsi and plastic, right, bottles and everything else,
it is,
then we're going to get beat by them. So we need to develop really sophisticated
salespeople.
We're
in a free market system, and it really does work under, yeah, our whatever you want to call it. But I also think about distribution. I mean, look, in 1940, they weren't really regularly flying food all over the country or
no,
shipping it over. And, you know, if you really want to do a 100-mile diet, if you will, here in New Jersey, there's no avocados, there's no bananas, there's no mango. You know, we're losing a lot of stuff. There's no olive oil, for God's sakes.
True.
Seriously, I mean, I don't know any olive trees around here. Do you?
I tried to grow one. It died.
Did you?
Yeah. I tried. It died.
You know, there's a little bit of compromise in there, but we aren't.
So, what I'm getting from David is that you can be a capitalist and still do raw.
Absolutely.
And you should be a capitalist,
well,
because that's the only way
the
that we're going
that
to.
That's we're in.
That's correct.
Right. I mean, it's not the greatest system ever, but we have to sway it.
In the system you're in. Yeah.
Yeah. And by the way, when somebody says, no, I can't, I'm against selling, then they're trying to sell you against selling.
Yeah,
you see what I mean? Somebody's always selling something.
It's a
philosophical quandary.
Yeah.
You can't get out of it. So we might as well really work to sell these things into stores to show them that there is a market for it. And that's what I do. I've been a pioneer in that for 20 years. And you have to deal with a lot of rejection. And, you know, in those early days, it was like just to sell 3 books about raw foods into a health food store was a challenge. Now it's like that they have a whole section in
right.
It's the biggest section in
health food
stores.
But if you've ever dealt with Whole Foods, and I'm sure you have.
I have.
Now, but you're advanced. That, you know, but local folks, and I used to be involved with Whole Foods regionally, and they would have these forums and groups for local producers, and it was so hard to get your pickles or whatever it is you're making
in there.
It's brutal.
I'm looking at Gene and I are both laughing at David because he's like, "Yeah, I've been there," and it didn't seem like a very positive thing.
God bless Whole Foods,
exactly.
It's not an easy process.
It's not an easy process, and then there's the way UNFI works with you, who's their supplier.
Yeah.
They're going to pay you on their fourth order of your product. So you're gonna be floating for 180
yeah.
days, sometimes a year.
It's a lot of
before
product.
You get the paid for the first order that they put in.
Yeah, it's a lot of product you have to finance, man.
Capitalism.
Yeah, you have to have cash to play
capitalism,
in that game.
Capitalism. That's what it is. Capitalism.
Well, but it's
yeah.
Sort of,
I know it's not fair either, though. No.
They're the big guys. They know it. They know they hold the cards.
Yeah, like, you know, for some reason, I think of the guy who started Celestial Seasonings Tea, and nobody wanted them way back in the day. And he would have to go little
yeah,
mom
story.
And pop grocery yeah. store every and just put it in there. And now, finally, as the pendulum continues to swing back to middle, you know, we're getting to a point where we understand why it makes such a difference.
So, you know. Talk to us about Is the chocolate, the naked chocolate, chocolate naked? I can't remember the title of the book. It's not in front
naked
of me.
Yes, chocolate. Naked chocolate. It's right in front of you on the wall.
All right.
You knucklehead.
Knucklehead. Look at she did a beautiful job. Everybody will get a chance to see that later. Is that your latest book?
No. That book came out in 2005.
But it does catch flies because that's what caught my eye when the press release came through. I'm like, ooh, look, he plays with chocolate.
And
let's
he's naked.
This,
yeah. Oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, we all have our clothes on, let's be clear. But anyway, so talk to us about some of the other things that you've written about. I know longevity.
Yes, I've got a book actually coming out on November 12th called Longevity Now, which has to do with many, many different theories about aging and what we can do about it. For example, calcium supplements. Everybody's like, oh, take calcium supplements for your bones. They don't work. They never worked. What's actually been found out to be better, much better, vastly million miles ahead of that, is actually taking progesterone. It's a hormone, and vitamin D3 is much more important than the actual nutrients that are in your body for bone mineralization.
Isn't that funny?
So, you know, these theories like that have, you know, we finally overturned them. So I'm kind of, you know, pounding that nail into that the coffin of that idea with this book is like the whole calcium theory calcifies you. You don't want to be eating calcium. The calcium is a byproduct of life forms that's been deposited on the earth. Right. We're then digging up those skeletons and eating that as a calcium supplement. That's like the worst idea ever.
It's kind of icky when you put it that way.
Yeah. It's like really
kinda.
Other than excellent.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a Halloween, like, I don't know, like a horror story if you think about it. Like, I'm eating calcified things.
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. It's like okay, it's like a zombie apocalypse.
I was going to say, Mr. Jones does die. Do you need his bones? Because I could use them. No. Icky. Icky.
Yeah, see, that's where I go back to. I like the idea of raw food being, you know, the life force. And that the more that you bring in and I don't know.
And that's an aspect of that book as well, is the whole thing about raw food, the superfood download, the super herb download, which is super critical beyond. I mean, this is how I look at it. I want to put this point out here. Nobody ever eats any medicine, meaning that, like, naturally, if you're living in wild nature, you're eating medicines all the time.
All the time.
The alkaloids that are in the food are medicines, but what we've done, we've domesticated everything, so we've taken the medicines out or diminished them radically, so we don't have any medicine. We've never had any medicine. The only medicine we've had is some concentrates of mushrooms that are done by doctors, or not doctors, pharmaceutical giants, and that are sold to us as antibiotics. Really what they are is super high chemical concentrates of mushroom extracts.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then we don't even realize, oh, that's made out of a mushroom.
Well, aspirin is willow bark, right?
It's willow bark, right. And then streptomycin, tetracycline, those are extracts of mushrooms. And this is something that we've got to kind of come to grips with.
Not those kinds.
Oh, okay.
It's New Jersey.
Having a flashback, man.
Well, put that Grateful Dead cassette back in your 8-track and we'll go on from there.
GD bag, I never had an 8-track of the Grateful Dead.
Oh, well, I don't know.
Let's talk about how magic mushrooms came into America. That's probably because it's related. It's related to chocolate.
This is cool.
In 1955, Gordon Wasson from New York City is the leading mycologist in the world, leading mushroom expert. Him and his wife Valentina went down to Oaxaca de Jimenez near Oaxaca, Mexico, to visit with Maria Sabina, the famous shamaness. And on that night, in, I think it was June 30th, 1955, they sat with her, and she served up the magic mushrooms in a chocolate drink.
Oh, my gosh.
And he wrote about that, and it appeared in Life magazine in 1957. Well, that sparked an enormous amount of youth to start researching what the heck is this stuff.
Is it psilocybin or something?
Yeah, that was psilocybin mushroom, including Timothy Leary and what was his name? Richard Alpert, who became Ram Dass. And then
Owsley? No.
He came later. And so the whole psychedelic 60s all sprung from that issue of Life magazine and that night in 1955 with Gordon Wasson. And it was one of the most profound moments in psychedelic history, and it was delivered in a chocolate drink.
Psychedelic history right here, kids. Wow.
Wow. You're like, Megan is really happy. I'm writing this down because, you know, I got to go back and look at it and read it so I can really absorb it.
I love
it. That is brilliant. So I'm thinking, as a shamaness, did she take these, magic mushrooms as a way of channeling, as a way of, what was her thing? It was like peyote
shamanic
of the
travel.
Native Americans kind of a thing?
It had a very sacred energy. It was a very sacred ceremony. And what Maria Sabina said many years later, yeah, it was a lot of fun and excitement going on, I'm sure. But she said many years later that because magic mushrooms became so popular, that sacredness of the original situation was just lost.
Yeah.
And that's something that I think is a very important thing for kids to understand, is because, you know, kids, you know, high school, we got magic mushrooms, here, eat this. But it's really not something you should do that way. It's very dangerous. You've got to actually do it in a very sacred way with somebody who's a mentor.
Mindfully, whatever,
Mindfully consumed.
Well, whatever.
That's
the right thing. Because you know what? I'm sure that she did not go overboard, and that it was just enough to put her in a state where she could, whatever it is that she did,
a medicinal state of bliss and
well said. Yeah. But again, what's so amazing about it is chocolate is interwound in.
I love that. And
so this is something that's very important: is that chocolate has interwound itself into an enormous part of our history, our cultural history. It's a very important part of where we are right now because chocolate is the best stress relief food. It's always has been.
You got any more samples, man? I could use a few.
I'm kidding. I didn't want to show you guys, but I've got more.
I missed the milk, the MYLK.
There's this one here.
I ate it. I gave it to you.
Thank you.
I gave it to you. But I think we've decided that this white
stuff. They
must
think I'm stressed. They're throwing chocolate at me.
Well, at least we do it quietly, Meg.
I know.
Meg. So where, David, I mean, obviously you could sell this online, which is anybody can get it. But locally, are you in stores or is it an online product?
Well, there's two stores in New York City that carry it. Westerly Market on 56th up there on 8th Avenue.
Yep.
And they have Sacred Chocolate back by the juice bar back there. So if you go all the way to the back corner of the store, you'll find it. And then there is Live Live on 10th Street.
Nice.
Between 1st and A.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to work on getting you out in locally here because we've got our chocolatier down at the end of Cornelia Street.
Oh, yeah. That's
Rose
right.
City. Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to get Bobby to get the chocolate.
Well,
in there.
I mean, I think if you start in boutiques like that, then you're just like the celestial seasonings guy, you know. But why is chocolate a stress reliever?
It probably has to do with the minerals and also the chemistry. The minerals, chocolate is number one in magnesium.
Yeah.
It's number one in iron of any plant.
Which is why it's such a good PMS food, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. No, because magnesium, and now there's new studies about magnesium that it is essential
and
to
the iron,
us.
You know.
Yeah.
And then chromium and vanadium. It's number one of any land plant in chromium and vanadium, which means blood sugar balancing.
Yeah.
And then it's extraordinarily high in copper and zinc and phosphorus, and it's probably higher than any other land plant in manganese. It's higher than any other land plant I know of. The only thing that would be higher is seaweed. And manganese is iron's little brother, so they work together. Iron and manganese work as a team. And when you put all eight of those minerals together, it's like that's extremely unusual. In fact, chocolate has so much magnesium in it that if you get really good quality cacao powder and you run a magnet over it, it will magnetize like iron filings.
Really?
Whoa. And that's really something to see. Really interesting. I've only seen that with three foods in my life. One of them was kelp, which is, you know, powdered kelp will do that. That's kind of obvious because it's so mineral rich. The other one, this one blew my mind, is grape skins.
Really?
Grape skins will
really
magnetize. Yeah, if you have grape skins as a powder and you run a magnet over it, it will magnetize just like cacao, which is that's where the resveratrol is. That's that anti-aging aspect of grapes.
Yeah, and really, do you get that in wine? I mean, you know, people like to think that they can drink wine to get the resveratrol, and I'm like, really? I mean, come on. Or is it just an excuse to, you know, get wasted on wine?
I think it's usually the latter.
Yeah.
But,
I
don't know. That's just
my
guess.
That's what I'm thinking.
I don't know.
But you know what?
She wants the microphone.
When I was pregnant, and after my first trimester with both my kids, I had a glass of hearty red wine with dinner.
Well, that used to be, like when I was pregnant and I was having a lot of early labor, the doctor would say, oh, drink a glass of wine and call me in an hour. You know, and if it was labor, it would continue. If it wasn't, you'd be like, okay, fine.
And it's really, I mean, wine, because it's basically the essence of grapes, it is a medicine, especially the dark wines, but not in 10, you know, not a whole bottle.
Well, you see, you know, there are those of us, and I will out myself as a recovering alcoholic, you know, when it's just not one of my things anymore. But it's funny to listen to people like, oh, wine is good, so let me drink a bottle.
Well, that's too much.
Yeah, I know. I wonder if chocolate could be like that.
Well, but you know what, but I think we have to make a distinction. You can't go down and get I don't mean to malign these people, but I'm going to, you can't go down and get a Hershey bar or a Nestle bar and get what you're getting in this.
No, that's right. No. Exactly.
Well, I mean, that's just so processed, right?
It's counteracted.
It just doesn't
with
work
the sugar
that way.
And the milk and the processed stuff, right?
If you look at my post.
Uh-huh. Oh, right.
You yes. You'll actually see that a lot of these health benefits, it's for chocolate that has at least 69% to 70% yeah. cacao. So it's not just like you can't just go and get some Hershey Kisses and be like, oh, yay. Yeah, like, it's not right. like that. And if also some of the things I touch upon, too, in my post, like the chemical compounds that make up chocolate a little bit, as well as how it backs up cardiovascular health and releases, I think it's called, it's PEA.
That Yeah, those are the other things that really are anti-stress.
Mood?
PEA is a very, it's actually, PEA is an antidepressant as
yes.
a chemical. Yes.
Really? Yeah.
And anandamide is the other one. Did you get that
PEA,
one in your article?
You mean literally P?
No.
Yeah, like it's spelled like P.
Like the little green P.
Yes. Yeah.
Is it like phenethylamine,
yes.
Phenethylamine, yeah. So I talk about that one, and I talk about how it releases endorphins, basically.
Yeah, well, there is a natural endorphin in chocolate, which is anandamide. It's an endorphin
okay.
ligand. It's exactly similar to what you release when you have a workout high.
Yeah.
And by the way, just I'm just going to put this out there for our listeners, since this is thegreendivas.com, is that the
Good
other
plug.
Green thing that people are smoking, that plant, it, THC, you know, you hear this thing, we have a THC receptor in our brain. You ever heard that? I mean,
oh,
we heard
yeah.
that in high school, so
yeah.
everybody would be like, oh, it's good, you know, yeah. we got to do this because we have a THC receptor. It's not a THC receptor. It's a cannabinoid receptor for anandamide, which is the chemical that's in chocolate. It's an anandamide receptor, and they're chemically related, very closely related.
And when you say anandamide, what does that mean?
It's anandamide means bliss. Ananda means bliss, and mide is chemical. Anandamide, the bliss chemical.
Oh, very cool,
Isn't
David. I'm blown away because,
it's actually Sanskrit.
Oh my, it's Sanskrit. It's not Greek. I'm blown away because not only I mean here you do chocolate, but your knowledge. Did you do this in your studies as a nutritionist, or is this something that just started to come to you, all of this, the chemical reactions and our minerals and all of that? Really, where does that come from? Because I'm blown away.
Well, I was well educated in the public schools of both New Jersey and California. Fortunately, I had some great teachers, especially in chemistry. But I do want to say that a great change happened in my life, and this relates to water, is that I'm a book reader. I love reading, and I'm a book collector. And
yep.
one of the things I did years ago, this started about a dozen years ago and continued on for many, many years, and that is I would take all these bottles of water that I would collect, all these amazing spring water bottles, and I'd put them up on the shelf with all my books. Now, if we've studied ever Emoto's work, we know that
yeah.
a single word
yep.
can affect the structure of water. So I took that to the point of like, wait a second, what would happen if I put these water bottles in between all my books? Because the book is a code, right? It's all of those words. And so I started putting all these bottles of water in between all my books. And then after like 3 months, 6 months, I drink that water. And that, when I think back on it now, that had a profound effect on my life.
See, I used to think if I slept
knowledge.
With books next to me, it would help. I'm not sure. But I hate to do this, but we've got to wrap up, kids. Well, we could do this all day, but we are going to do some more fun after the show. We're
yeah.
going to do some video and get some more fun information from David. And I just want to mention that next week, we're still on the food thing. We have Marion Nessel calling in for
mm-hmm.
next week's show, who is an author, and she's got a very long title, the Paulette Goddard Professor, Department of Nutrition, Food Studies and Public Health, and Professor of Sociology at New York University.
Ringing, but yeah,
that,
for short.
That is, yeah, exactly.
Or whatever.
But she's also a nominee for the James Baird Foundation Leadership Award.
I won't be here. You know that, right?
We'll miss
you. I'll be in Toronto.
Toronto.
I can call in if you want, but
yeah,
yeah
no,
whatever.
Well, that's what we'll do.
Yeah.
Anyway, and for those of you that are listening and want to keep listening, you want to keep listening because Uncle Buggy's radio show is coming on. He plays awesome tunes. He happens to be my big brother, but, you know, that's besides the point.
Yeah.
And he's down at the other studio.
Right. All
so
right.
when we switch over, you might have to restart your browser, but just stay, people.
Right.
Like
in the meantime,
Gracie, stay.
Meantime, David Wolf, thank you so much for making the trip out here. I'm blown away and feel like not only did I get good chocolate, but I got an education, and that is brilliant.
Fantastic. You green divas, you're going brown over here. This is awesome.
With pleasure.
Oh, we're going to get naked with chocolate in a little while. Anyway, thanks again, David. Thanks for coming out and taking the trip out. And we're going to have some more fun. But please stay tuned.
You've been listening to the Green Divas Radio Show. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, follow them on Facebook and Twitter, and don't forget to visit the blog at thegreendivas.com. That's thegreendivas.com. And remember to share the good green news with friends and family.